This is WSBT South Bend, the sports leader. This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Oh, yeah!
On 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
What is this?
We're talking Notre Dame football, the NFL, the Cubs, and more.
Oh, yeah, I like this idea.
The Leprechaun Lunch.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
With Sean Stiers.
All you do is dribble.
I have to dribble. If I give it to you, you just shoot.
And Evan Sharpley.
You're a chucker.
You chuck.
If it's happening in sports.
Bumble!
We're talking about it.
Flag on the play.
Now your hosts. Sean Stiers and former Irish quarterback. Evan Sharpley.
Glad to have you with us. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, presented by Bud Light Seltzer. Light and refreshing, four fruit flavors, mango, strawberry, lemon, lime, and black cherry. Just 100 calories, 2 grams of carbs, and less than a gram of sugar. It's Bud Light Seltzer. I mean, the weather warmed up. It's not officially summer yet, but it feels a heck of a lot more like summer, or it has this week anyway, with the heat in the 80s and the humidity. So Bud Light Seltzer is the way to go when you're out and about, whether you're on the golf course or whatever you happen to be doing. A very light and refreshing drink, Bud Light Seltzer. Mr. Sharpley, how are you today?
Hey, not too bad. It's good to hear your voice. I know it's Friday, so we're looking forward to a good weekend.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And May has flown by. We are at the end of May, and it's going to be June next week, June 1st. Is Monday, so we're trending toward getting back closer to sports. We'll talk a lot about that over the course of this show. We've got some comments this week from both Cincinnati Reds pitcher Trevor Bauer and super agent Scott Boras. The Associated Press obtained an email that Boras sent to his clients. Trevor Bauer wasn't happy about it. We'll kind of give you some of that. I don't know if it was back and forth, but some comments from both sides. We always love talking about Trevor Bauer. He gives us plenty of content on this show and other shows as well. But we've got some Notre Dame football. We've got some Notre Dame / college baseball we'll discuss in the second segment. Last week, Evan and I got into a proposal that has been floated out there that is kind of gaining some momentum. You've got some big names in college baseball, including a national championship and former Notre Dame assistant coach Brian O'Connor, who's been at Virginia for a long time, won a national championship a few years ago with the Cavaliers. He's one of the people behind this move to potentially push the college baseball season from a mid-February to a mid-March start and also have the College World Series end in late July instead of late June. So we touched on that a little bit last week. We'll get back to a little bit on the bigger picture of that this week, but we will also get into maybe what it means for the first 3 to 4 weeks of Notre Dame's schedule, since they are so used to playing 18 to 20 or so games on the road to start the season. And Evan has been there as a former Notre Dame baseball player himself, so we will touch on that. But we have a slew of Notre Dame football news we're going to get to in this first segment. We'll get to the grad transfer, Trevor Spates, in a minute. But Evan, I wanted to start off by asking you this report earlier this week. An announcement is expected to come next week on whether or not the Notre Dame Navy game is going to be played in Dublin. And we have been talking about this really since early on since the kind of the start of the pandemic, almost 3 months ago now, since things really shut down. And that was one of the first things that came up, what could potentially be the impact of that game in Ireland. And the Navy athletic director, Jack Swarbrick, everybody for the most part has been saying, well, as you know, we're still planning on it being played over there. So as of where we are right now, how shocked would you be, Evan, if that game actually is played in Dublin?
I'd be shocked. Completely shocked.
I'm shocked.
Yeah. That's a line from Dodgeball, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes, can't
eat the Ocho. Yeah. I don't think so.
Jason Bateman.
I'm gonna that's right. I'm gonna stick to what I've been saying. I would still be shocked if it's played there in Ireland. I think it'll be played. I just don't think it's gonna be there. I mean, unless unless some big things change. I don't know how they pull it off. You know, obviously, it would likely be, I would think, without fans. I mean, I know people that have already canceled their trips there that were planning on going.
Yeah.
I would be shocked if it's played there in Ireland.
Yeah, and I just think that the fact, and I said this week, that the fact that there is a pending announcement makes me lean more toward it's going to be canceled rather than it is still on. And I just think the fact that there is still a crowd limitation thing, you know, in place in Dublin and in Ireland that goes beyond the August 29th date of the game. It seems like if Navy can figure something out, because this is a Navy game, we still don't know exactly what crowd size and all that stuff like is even going to be like even here in the States if and when the college football season gets going. Everyone's obviously planning on it right now, but it just seems like that there's this contract that's in place with these games to be played in Dublin over the next, I think it's 5 years, and so there are some spots where this game could potentially go down the road, whether it's 2022 or 2024. So it seems like that would be the better way to go right now, just based on how everything's going.
And the
sooner the better, because of what you were talking about too, with people who maybe do still have their flights and hotels or B&Bs or what, you know, Airbnbs, whatever, booked. Get it done sooner than later. Some news yesterday regarding basketball. Notre Dame and Kentucky announced a 3-game men's basketball series. It's going to begin during this upcoming season. The Irish will go to Rupp Arena December 12th this year to tip off 3 games. Next year in December, it'll be a neutral site game. And then in 2 years, 2022, December 2022, Kentucky makes the trip to Purcell Pavilion. So what do you think about Notre Dame-Kentucky basketball inking a series?
Well, hopefully it's as entertaining as the last time they played, because that was a pretty awesome game to watch. So
Elite Eight, 2015.
That's great. That's awesome. I mean, you know, they don't play that often, and I think that it'll be great for both programs to dial that thing up. So I'm excited to see that series. You know, I'm sure that fans on both sides will travel well. You know, knowing really, you know, the success that Kentucky has had in the past, and their fan base normally travels pretty good. So I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I do too. And again, you know, there are a lot of fans who don't necessarily like the non-conference schedule. And I get some of that with some of the teams that end up coming to Purcell Pavilion. This obviously is a pretty big ticket type of game that's you at least get one game against a big name by Kentucky. And back probably, what, 2013, 2014, they came up here as well. So, you know, they used to play quite a bit, 62 times all time they have played.
Really?
But it is, you know, that goes more back into the Digger era, and even back before that, I think. Yeah, so they haven't played quite as often here recently. I'm interested to see where the neutral site game ends up being next year, because I said, well, maybe you play down at Lucas Oil, and, you know, you kind of meet halfway and all that. And Darren Pritchett brought up a good point. Well, you play there, you might have two-thirds of the crowd end up being Kentucky fans, because it's so close to Kentucky. And the fact that even though the proximity
what were the odds on that? What were we setting that as? I might take the over. It might be like
even more.
Yeah.
And you know, you might be right. Like Darren said, Madison Square Garden, and I think that would be a good one, because you'd still have some Kentucky fans, but I think you'd have a better chance of getting a lot more Notre Dame fans just because of the Notre Dame fan base out there in that kind of East Coast corridor around New York and New Jersey and Boston and all that kind of stuff. So be interesting to see where it ends up. So tease this a little bit. Notre Dame has added another grad transfer. This one, a running back from Stanford, Trevor Spates. He's 5'11", 203 pounds, missed all of Stanford's 2019 season with an apparent injury. He had a total of 95 carries for 363 yards and a touchdown in his sophomore and junior seasons combined. Also had 7 catches for 54 yards. He becomes the 4th grad transfer to join the Irish during the offseason. You've got safety Isaiah Pryor, who came over from Ohio State. You've got most recently the cornerback Nick McCloud, who came over from North Carolina State, and also wide receiver Ben Skowronek, who came over from Northwestern. So he is basically at 5'11", 203, about the size of Jameer Smith, and just a little bit bigger than Sebo Flemmis, or at least you know what they were listed back at the start of spring football practice. Smith at 207, so he's just 4 pounds lighter, but they're both, all three of those guys, at 5'11". And the connection here, he was recruited at Stanford by current Notre Dame running backs coach Lance Taylor. So it's already, Evan, a pretty crowded backfield. You've got Jafar Armstrong, Sebo Flemmis, Jameer Smith. You've got sophomore-to-be Kyren Williams, and you've got incoming freshman Chris Tyree, who a lot of people think is going to be, you know, at least from the star rating, he's the most talented and fastest of all those guys. And so now you add a sixth name to the backfield in grad transfer Trevor Spates from Stanford. So what do you think about this?
Well, you know, first off, he's going to add some, you know, much-needed experience, you know, and some maturity and you know, the years that he's played. But, you know, he probably is looking at this running back room like, all right, there's really no clear-cut guy. You know, I can come in and make a name for myself right away. And I think that, you know, going through a process where you're maybe shopping around and doing the grad transfer, that's something that goes into it is, you know, how much does experience in a program and playing college football for that long, you know, how much will that maybe at least give you a box to check off compared to guys that, you know, don't have, you know, as many days logged in a college program. So I'm still not saying there's a clear cut winner for me. You know, even with this addition, you know, at this point, I think you maybe pull, you know, 10 guys and you might get six, you know, you might get, I don't know, each guy get a vote, and then, I don't know, somebody wins by one.
Right.
You know, I think that it's going to be still pretty split as who it's going to be. It might be a running back by committee. And, you know, if we've learned anything over the course of Brian Kelly's tenure at Notre Dame is a lot of times it's whoever gets hot, we're going to keep him in, which
yeah.
I don't know how much I agree with that, because a lot of it has to do with what the guys up front are doing too. But, you know, it's worked at times. You know, you look at a guy like Josh Adams, when he got hot, man, he got hot. So you're going to ride that hot hand and until, you know, he's not hot. And Dexter Williams was another guy, too, where, okay, he wasn't really sitting as the number one running back, and then, boom, well, granted, he wasn't playing for a little while. But, you know, then he just really took off. So I could see that being the case. I guess the struggle, Sean, on this is without, you know, a full spring and now kind of a segmented summer, there's, you know, the timing now for guys to solidify themselves as a one, you know, 1A or 2, whatever they're going to list it as on the depth chart, that's gone now. So it's going to be kind of trial by fire. You know, players are going to have to really impress coaches early on in fall camp or whatever we're going to call it, OTAs or rookie camp. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
they're what gonna is it going to be called?
They're going to have to turn some heads right away. But, you know, they haven't had the time, you know, in the spring for some of these younger guys to, okay, this is what it's like to pick up a blitz. So I don't know. I'm curious. I think it does favor, you know, with a grad transfer like this, again, in being in a program and bringing some experience and maturity to the room. I think at least, you know, for him, he had to been saying, I've got that on these guys.
Let me ask you about the whole pick up the blitz thing, because you're a quarterback, and if your running back doesn't pick up the blitz, that impacts you quite a bit, obviously. So we've talked about, not necessarily us, but on SportsBeat even, Chris Tyree and all this talent that he has. And I guess how much should something like that impact whether or not he's able to get on the field? Say he's not fully up to speed on that early on. Are there still ways where you can get him carries, you know, versus, well, he can't pick up the blitz, so we're not going to put him on the field at all?
Yeah, I mean, you know, early downs, but, you know, you don't want to get into a situation where if he's playing,
you're telegraphing.
on first and second down, right? You know, and you get into maybe a third and medium where it could be a run, it could be a pass, and maybe blitz percentages go up, and you're like, well, we're subbing Tyree out. You know, that's a dead giveaway then. So you've got to have, you know, you've got to have a little bit of balance between the two. If you've got a guy that can play on first and second down, you want to prepare him enough, you know, to put him into situations where he can still play on third down. And you can do some things as a quarterback. And what's great, you know, with Notre Dame this year is having a veteran quarterback and having an offensive coordinator and quarterback coach that understands the offense. There are certain things, Sean, that you can do as a quarterback and protecting or covering up a running back who maybe doesn't really know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Depending on, right. Yeah. Depending on where protection is, you know, if it's a slide protection to the left, maybe having the dual read for an offensive lineman and with a veteran offensive line, you know, maybe you have in a dual read, Sean, would be like, maybe the right guard is reading the Mike linebacker to the Sam instead of the running back reading Mike to Sam to strong safety. You maybe only give him, okay, the running back is now going to chip the strong side defensive end and then is going to release on a route. You know, there's things that you can do from the quarterback position and to as an offensive coordinator to cover some of those bases where then your tendencies, they go away because now you do have a back who's, you know, playing multiple downs.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. And kind of going back to what you were talking about, with a lack of spring practice to really sort some of the depth chart issues out, that becomes another, maybe one of the bigger priorities going into training camp. And let's kind of segue into that a little bit, because we know the fall semester at Notre Dame is scheduled to begin August 10th now. They moved that up. We still don't know exactly when players are going to be back on camp on campus. And typically they would be back in June. There are reports now just over the last couple of days, maybe in the last 36 hours or so, that maybe they're getting back in June. We had initially heard that it's probably going to be sometime in July, so there's still nothing definite that we know right now. So as a former player, Evan, and someone who's been through this a little bit, let's talk about June first. We'll go June and July and then into training camp as well. So kind of lay it out for our listeners, what a June would typically look like first for the players when they get back on campus for the quote-unquote voluntary workouts?
So June is, you know, move into the dorms. Everyone on the football team is staying in the same dorms, and usually there's a few, you know, players from other teams that may be on campus too. Normally you're taking 6 credits, so that's 2 classes. You know, some players would maybe book a few more, but normally it's 6. And then it's really a time to acclimate your body. You know, it's workouts in the weight room, it's speed and agility sessions, and then it's player led, you know, 7-on-7s and skill work. I know that some rules have changed where there's a little more interaction from the coaches at this point during the summer months. We didn't have that. You know, it was all player led. Uh-huh. Fortunately, you know, when I was a freshman, we had Brady Quinn, who had been a starter since his freshman year. So, you know, you're kind of walking into a well-oiled machine of,
sure,
all right, we've got, you know, we've got our skill work that we're going to do, and then we're going to do some 7-on-7 and 1-on-1s. And so that's really what it would look like. And you'd have different workout times, you know, depending on your class schedule. You know, you'd either work out really early, go take classes, or you'd have morning classes and then go work out in the afternoon. It kind of depended on how you set that up. But normally you're done with workouts and classes by early afternoon, similar to what would occur even during the football season. And then, you know, it would be the 7-on-7 and whatnot. It would usually be every couple days. It wouldn't be every day. But, you know, since you have so much downtime, normally you'd, at least in my, you know, my experience, I would at least grab a few receivers from my lifting group and say, well, if we don't have 7-on-7 tonight, let's go through our route tree and get some work in.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of time spent on your own, which I wasn't really expecting. I thought there'd be more coach time during the summer. Okay. But with NCAA rules, that really wasn't the case. And again, like I said, that has changed a little bit. So really what it is, Sean, is it's a kind of a, you're acclimating your body back into, you know, the weight room and lifting pretty heavy, and building up, as you kind of transition into July, and then certainly followed up by fall camp then in August.
Right. So again, we don't necessarily know for certain that that's going to happen. So if players are still not on campus in June, what maybe could, should the players be doing with their time when they're still home in June?
Well, you know, I think recently there was an article done on Ian Book. You know, he's put in some work with a good friend of mine that I know, Will Hewlett, who he's worked with as quarterback coach since high school. You know, those are things you can do. I mean, you don't necessarily need a personal trainer, but you've got to do something is the big thing. I mean,
right.
I'm not going to go out and say, well, you need to purchase an entire weight room and start doing that. But, I mean, you can't just be sitting around not doing anything. So, you know, whether it's making sure that your condition is right, you know, doing maybe some longer distance stuff. Certainly the speed aspect is an easy thing that players can be working on because it doesn't need to, you know, take up a whole lot of time. I mean, you can work on and do some speed improvement things and explosive type, you know, drills for 30 to 45 minutes a day. And you're really not going to be too sore from that. And then hammer home the skill, you know, what you can. I don't know if it's your mom or dad catching passes for you, or, you know, if the linemen are working on, you know, their kick step and pass pro. You know, you've got to be able to do what you can with what you have, where you are, and make sure that you're staying as sharp as possible, because when and if this happens, you know, it's the on-ramp is going to be much shorter than players are going to be accustomed to. So to knock that rust off, they want to make sure that they're doing something.
Right. Okay, so that is the month of June. And again, they could end up being back on campus in June. We just don't know for certain yet. So now what about July? What does a typical July look like for the team as they get closer to the start of training camp in August?
You know, it's going to be a lot of the same. And one thing to mention here as well is how drastically recruiting has changed now during this pandemic, and dead periods and players not able to take visits. As far as recruiting is concerned, you know, that's greatly changed what the coaching staff has done, because normally during the summer, the majority of the coaches are out on the road recruiting and going to camps. They're not on campus. You know, right now they're spending a lot more time, likely, if they are in person, doing anything in person. You know, they're local now, just because of the dead periods that the NCAA has enacted. So a July is very much like a June. You've at this point now settled into a pretty good routine on balancing, you know, schoolwork, on balancing the strength training side of things. You know, you're not as sore as you were in June. You know, you're starting to make some strength gains. You're feeling more explosive. You're feeling faster. And you're really, you know, you're eyeing August to start to peak as the season begins. And then, you know, towards the end of July, you want to finish strong in the classroom. You get a little bit of time right after those wrap up. You know, if you go home, some players went home. Some like to just stay on campus. But June and July really are kind of mirror images. And I believe, Sean, you asked me a couple weeks ago, you know, could players start in July and still be okay? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would love, you know, the 8 weeks, 8+ weeks, you know, I think is important. So it would be, I'd be pretty hard pressed to say, man, okay, you get 4 weeks in July and then, you know, ramp right into pads and hitting people within, you know, a 6 week period from being back on campus, I think is a pretty, pretty tight runway to make work.
Now, I know it's probably even different for you from when you were in high school, but like when I was in high school, you know, we didn't have all the summer conditioning, even like right now. You showed up in early to mid August and you had 2-a-days, and your conditioning and your practice, you know, like the morning practice might be a bunch of your conditioning and guys are puking because they haven't, you know, been doing summer conditioning all summer, but then you're doing some football stuff in the afternoon, and the NCAA did away with a lot of that. But I just saw today where they are considering now the NCAA a six-week training camp. So adding a couple of weeks to training camp in preparation for the season, you know, with all of this stuff factored in. So my question is, you know, sort of with that in mind and maybe even whether or not that happens, what kind of adjustments potentially need to be made to training camp because of the fact that you know, everyone's on different schedules, one, but two, everything has been delayed by not just a few weeks, but some months in many cases.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the Wild West right now. You know, you have some programs saying they're playing, some that they're not. You know, whose voice are you listening to in preparation for the season? And I'm all for, you know, extending the training camp phase. You know, I'm hopeful that the phase prior to that in preparation can be extended as long as possible, too. I'm sure the players probably aren't super excited to hear that training camp is 6 weeks long.
You know,
depending on, I mean, it can get, depending on where you are and how it's set up, you know, it's changed a lot, Sean. You know, when I was a freshman, we would do, you know, some days we'd have doubles where we'd have a practice, a 2.5 hour practice in the morning, 2.5 hour practice in the afternoon, followed usually then by the next day where we'd have one long, like, 4 hour practice. So You're still kind of on the field the same amount of time, but okay, it's not a double, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to do this twice. And then in between that, it's a ton of film. You know, like sometimes we would meet just to figure out what we were going to meet about at the next meeting. And that's kind of sometimes what you can get into with training camp, is it just becomes this long, drawn-out, kind of negative atmosphere. And you want to try to fight that as best you can. Now, these, you know, players at this point, though, because they haven't had football, they may be chomping at the bit, and they're like, yeah, let's practice for 2 months before we start playing. I don't know
right.
What that feel is.
It's probably a matter of how you vary it and kind of break it up, I would imagine, kind of to what you're talking about right there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they'll still have to be creative on balancing it out where, you know, it doesn't turn into kind of an NFL-style job where, you know, it's 24/7 for 6 weeks. And I'm sure that the coaching staff, you know, when they're going through these different models, they've got that in their heads to make sure that that's not the case.
Well, so let me ask you this. With all that we're talking about and you're talking about there, if they do add on a couple of weeks, and even if they didn't, I've been thinking about this. With, you've had the lack of spring practice, you've had the condensed off season. With all of this stuff taken into consideration, would there be any benefit? NFL teams, one of the big popular things over the last few years has been two NFL teams get together and they scrimmage for a couple of days. They can do group stuff, they can do team stuff. You know, position group stuff, team stuff, all this. Would there be any benefit if the NCAA permitted two teams to scrimmage like that, like NFL teams do? Just for this year because of everything that's going on?
Well, you know, having gone through a fall camp, I can say, you know, if you're going to extend it, it probably would be a breath of fresh air to beat up on some people that are not your teammates. Yeah, I'm serious, you know. You know, if depending on where you are on the depth chart, you know, you're usually going against the same guy every day. So by, you know, week two, you're like, you know, I can't be nice to you anymore. Like, you know, get out of my face as we're putting our pads on, getting dressed. Like, just, can you just leave me alone for a little bit? And every camp I've been a part of, though, there's usually kind of this boiling point where
I can imagine.
Know, you've got, all of a sudden, you've got brawls and fights after every play.
Yeah. And then you add 2 weeks
are like,
to it.
Exactly. So I think for more than anything, Sean, yeah, it would be nice to kind of get a change of pace where – it's, you know, okay, there's light at the end of the tunnel. The season is right around the corner. We're seeing some jerseys that aren't ours. I think more for morale than anything.
Okay, so not necessarily from a big picture standpoint, but, I was thinking like a couple years ago, Notre Dame basketball in Cincinnati did that super secret scrimmage that they did before, you know, that kind of stuff. They got together, they scrimmaged, they they did some stuff. It gives you a chance to see your team. So I'm thinking, you know, like Indiana and Notre Dame get together at Lucas Oil Field or just someplace down there in Indy. You know, you meet halfway and you do that for a couple of days. I just interesting, you know. But again, like you said, just the length of it. Hadn't really thought about that. The monotony as you add potentially two more weeks to it. One more thought before we wrap up this segment, because you said it and I've used the term before as well. It just seems like the wild, wild west with everyone, every conference, every school is essentially able to write their own timeline and what they want to do. And I've heard people kind of floating out there, college football needs a commissioner. So my question to you, is it even feasible for college football to have a commissioner?
Well, it needs something. I could tell you that much. As long as it's not Rob Manfred, I'll be okay.
Preach.
I don't know. I mean, I understand the sentiment, right? You know, people, I think, players, coaches kind of want someone or some voice to be able to listen and turn to, because at this point right now, you know, I think people want direction, right? They want structure, they want direction, and it just kind of seems that maybe they aren't sure where to look because it's not coming from one speakerphone. But, you know, and I joke with the Rob Manfred thing is sometimes that's not always good either. Because you could have a microphone not doing well, or, you know, the what's happening behind closed doors getting leaked out. So I think it's worth a discussion. And even if there is still, you know, a board, but you have someone who is a little more vocal on, you know, whether you need to call that person the commissioner, I don't know. But the buck may then be able to, you know, stop with somebody. So you can ask pertinent questions of, you know, why is this grad transfer? Why is he okay to be immediately eligible? And why is this one not, gosh. Right? I mean, there's a number of topics, or what, you know, what is targeting? You know, there's a number of topics that then maybe the commissioner of the NCAA could be, you know, could give a little more clarity on versus hiding. I'm not saying that the NCAA is hiding, but it seems that there is an umbrella for protection.
Yeah, I mean, the NCAA has essentially become the federal government. There are stacks and stacks of rules and regulations, but ultimately the buck gets passed, I think, far too often. And I think that that college football would definitely benefit from it, because college football is essentially separate from all the other sports in college athletics, because there's an NCAA championship for every other sport but football, and football is completely regulated or run differently when it comes to that postseason, from the bowl games and what used to be the BCS and now the college football playoff. I think that in a perfect world, you would have a commissioner who is directing all these different parts of the country, the conferences, the Power Five conferences, Notre Dame, and even everyone below them. But I don't know that any of those conferences, especially the most powerful, like the SEC and the ACC, I don't think that they want to give up the autonomy that they have over their own little fiefdoms right now. You know, that's what I look at. Yeah, it'd be great if you did have a commissioner directing all this stuff, but as of right now, the conference commissioners get to have a lot of their own control that they have.
What is it, states' rights and federal rights here we're talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
We didn't talk about politics on this show.
We just dance around it.
That's right.
All right, he's Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Steyers. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley, presented by Bud Light Seltzer. We will take a time out. When we come back, we have some more football to touch on. We have some baseball as well, including Notre Dame and Major League Baseball. What's going on with their collective bargaining and their push to try to get back on the field? My head keeps spinning every time I even think about what's going on there. But we'll have some of those Scott Boras and Trevor Bauer comments coming up when we return. Leprechaun Lunch, Sean and Sharpley, presented by Bud Light Seltzer on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Oh. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley continues on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, along with former Notre Dame quarterback and baseball player Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Stiers. We're presented by Bud Light Seltzer, light and refreshing in mango, strawberry, lemon, lime, and black cherry. It is Bud Light Seltzer, and this is the time of year to have some Bud Light Seltzer now that it is hot
and
getting more humid all the time. Hey, I'm glad you mentioned this in the break, Evan, because I would have forgotten about it otherwise, but I'm glad that you brought it up. Congratulations to Penn's Ryan Lynch and Bremen's Aaron Coffle, the baseball and softball Gatorade Players of the Year for the state of Indiana, even though their senior seasons were unfortunately canceled. Ryan Lynch is committed to pitch. He's a lefty, committed to pitch for Notre Dame this upcoming season, and Aaron has been committed to Kentucky for about 10 years, I think, to play softball. But congratulations to both of them, and they are a couple of people that you've worked with as well.
Yeah, and this is actually, Aaron won last year too, so she's back-to-back.
Yeah, that's true, two-time. Yeah.
Granted, they didn't play this year, but still really cool. You know, Ryan and Aaron have trained at our facility, which we no longer have the facility, but worked with Aaron back when she was in middle school on speed and agility. Ryan's been in there doing some strength and conditioning. So really, really cool to see the success that they have. I mean, two super hard workers, very driven, but also very humble. You know, just really good families, awesome people. And, you know, there's a reason why they're having the success. So it's going to be pretty cool to watch their careers here at the next level. You know, now that high school's over, time for the next step. And I know both of them are prepared and ready to kind of take it by storm.
I think I've told you this before. I don't know Ryan personally. I saw him pitch a couple of years ago in regionals when Penn faced Mishawaka over in La Porte. But I do know Aaron and her family. Her older brother, Tyler, used to play travel ball scrappers with my son, Jesse, several years back. Now it's, you know, make me feel older, you know, the more that's kind of part of the past. But she was always running around, and like back then it wasn't necessarily as much softball, but she was like doing these triathlons and all of the, you know, like kids triathlons and stuff like that. She was just a super multi-sport athlete, and even though she didn't get to play her senior year, she leaves Bremen High School as the all-time home run record holder in the state of Indiana for girls softball. So that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, regardless, baseball, softball, she has one of the best swings.
Oh, yeah.
I've been around. I mean, and she works really hard at it too. So it was really fun to kind of play around with. You know, she's really smart, very cerebral. You know, one of those players that, you know, when you're a coach, is fun because you can give her a little nugget and then she'll take it and run with it. So, you know, following her freshman year, going into her sophomore year, we started using a little bit of data to kind of track her swing. And I use that quite a bit, a blast motion sensor to kind of look at her swing angle, the path, how hard she's swinging, how quick she's swinging. And I'm not going to say that there was a revamp, but, you know, there are a lot of light bulbs with Aaron, you know, her dad, who she works very closely with too, and they do an awesome job. Their relationship is really cool too.
Yeah.
And then boom, you know, she hits 20 bombs, hits 22 bombs, you know, and then finishes her career both as the, you know, all time for a single season and all time career, even though she hasn't, you know, she's going to miss one full season, is unbelievable.
Yeah. And of course they won state last year, her junior season, and they were state runner-up the year before that. So a couple of really great high school student athletes. Again, congratulations to Penn's Ryan Lynch, the Gatorade Baseball Player of the Year for Indiana, and Bremen's Aaron Coffle, the Gatorade Softball Player of the Year. And again, Ryan will go to Notre Dame next year. Aaron Coffle is headed off to Kentucky. Congratulations to them. Just some food for thought based on what you're talking about. A lot of people succeed, but get in and to have the chance to work with someone like you, Evan, who has that technology, it might be just a minor tweak or two, like you're talking about there, that really pushes you over the top.
Yeah, and what's been neat during this time period, too, is, you know, a lot of things are changing. I was already using technology, and most all my training was in person, but now I'm doing primarily, at least for baseball and football, all virtual training. So it's, you're a click of a button away for FaceTime, but we're still tapping into and using technology. Most of the hitters now, they just get their own sensor. We're doing some analysis, 30 minutes, then they get a schedule that they follow for the week as far as hitting, send me video and feedback, and, we're off and running. So it's pretty cool. I can do it from the comfort of my garage while, other players are, at their houses too. So pretty cool time.
All right. Tell you what, let's go ahead and take our final timeout. We'll come back. We have plenty to still get into, including some of that college baseball conversation and what a Notre Dame season, start to a season anyway, could look like if college baseball shifts its schedule. Instead of beginning in February, you're beginning in mid-March, and also the Trevor Bauer, Scott Boras stuff, and everything that's going on in Major League Baseball. So we'll do that when we come back. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley, presented by Bud Light Seltzer, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Yeah. You feel it, baby?
They're playing Evan's tune.
This is it right here.
Always song, makes baby. It an even better Friday, doesn't it?
It is, yeah.
Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley, presented by Bud Light Seltzer on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. We've still got plenty of conversation to go before we wind things down on this Friday, the last Friday of the month of May. It is May 29th. And so we were talking last week, Evan, about this proposal that's gaining some momentum. It would shift the start and the end of college baseball season by a month. So a bigger chunk of the season would be played in the summer months. Like right now, the last month of the regular season is mid-May, and then you get into your conference tournament. So this would shift it from May until June. And then instead of the College World Series ending the last week of June, it would end in late July. And maybe more importantly, especially for Northern schools, is instead of starting in mid-February, you would start in mid-March, which would, I think, help the attendance of a lot of Northern schools when you think about it. So just in general, any new thoughts on this since we talked about it last week?
I still like it. It's not a new thought. I still like it.
I'm still
on board. I hope the train keeps rolling through on this. I don't know exactly what it's going to look like, but I got to think that, the push that we're seeing from a ton of big name coaches, several here in the North, Michigan's head baseball coach, a couple of former Notre Dame assistants as well. I think that they're, they're probably listening to coaches as a whole and to see, I think, some of the youth that these coaches are bringing and some of these ideas, I think is very helpful. It's been done the same way for so long. It doesn't mean it's right. It doesn't mean it necessarily works. There's hurdles. I think the money study that you talked about last week was pretty intriguing. Just the amount of money that's spent at the beginning of the season, especially for teams here in cold weather where they're going to be traveling and then on the road, how much money they spend on a non-revenue generating sport it puts you in a big hole. And then when a pandemic hits, now people that are looking to sharpen their pencils and make cuts are saying, oh, let's eye the baseball program who spends this much money, to go on a spring break trip between lodging, travel, food. Even though we normally ate at the Golden Corral, it still gets expensive after you do it for so many times, So I think if you're able to push the start back, you're not going to hurt anybody's feelings. And I think, too, to really amp up you know, the postseason. I think sometimes it gets lost in the shuffle. If you're not a true college baseball fan, it gets lost in the shuffle a little bit because, you know, summer or, you know, classes are kind of ending. You know, kids are gone. Usually towards the end of the season, you're, as a baseball team, you're the only ones that are there.
Yeah.
So now, not that those students would be on campus during June and July, but now you may turn it into, and I know we talked about this a little bit last week, you may turn it into now, you know, a more fan-friendly environment in place for, you know, the fans of the South Bend area to come to watch Notre Dame play an end-of-the-year, you know, series against North Carolina.
Yeah.
It becomes very much like a minor league environment, and if the South Bend Cubs have proved anything, is fans in this area like going and watching baseball games at fun venues with good food and, you know, an atmosphere of, I don't know, doing silly things in between innings. You know, you can start to add that type of mentality at the ballpark. So I think it's a good move. As we brought up last week, Sean, there's a few questions that'll have to be answered on what the draft looks like, how some summer leagues are affected. But I think if you get everybody in the same room and say, this is the path that we're going down, you could include, you know, the Northwoods League that does summer leagues, the Cape League, and say, all right, guys, we don't want you to disappear. You know, how can we do this where it's still a win for everybody that's involved?
Yeah. And, I mean, you make a great point about just the attendance and giving fans more chances, because right now, it's different in other parts of the country, but again, in most parts up here where we are, and there are a lot of college baseball programs even more northern than Notre Dame, but when you look at this part of the country, it's just starting to get nice in May, and that's when the season is ending, or at least when you get the last of your home games, potentially. And then you go to your conference tournament, and then not everybody gets to host an NCAA regional. So it's just starting to get nice, and then the season ends. So you could potentially have games all through the end of May and through the middle of June, and give yourself a chance to have a lot more attendance. And I know Notre Dame over the last several years has talked about different ways to sort of spruce up the environment and stuff like that. But I think this would go a long way as well, just the weather itself around it. So I wanted to hit this. Notre Dame typically spends its first month of the season on the road. That's 18 or so games on average. The first three weekends are spent in the Sun Belt states. They have to fly down there every weekend to play three or four games the first three weekends before ACC play begins. So if this proposal goes through, Evan, what would your scheduling for the first 3 weeks of a season maybe look like that would begin in mid-March of 2022?
I think you still start the season probably on the road somewhere warm, and maybe look at it like a spring training. You know, you could even do it where you fly south and then bus north and play games on your way back up. Now that would, you know, certainly you'd have to have
your barnstorming back up north.
Yeah, and a lot of NAIA schools, that's what they do.
Yeah.
But you'd have to have buy-in from academic support for sure, unless it's centered around when spring break would be, and I'd have to check when that exact date is. But then, you know, the following 2 weeks as you lead up to ACC play, I mean, I think you'd be able to find dates to play in this area. So whether you're maybe going to Ann Arbor or, you know, Michigan's coming down to play you know, play some Big Ten schools,
yeah,
that are local there. And maybe playing some cool venues. I know we've seen that a few times, whether it's a minor league stadium like Fifth Third, or we played it in the Chicago White Sox stadium 1 year against Northwestern, is maybe doing
right.
some things like that too.
Right.
But certainly I think you start it probably on the road. I like the barnstorming idea. I think that'd be cool.
That's interesting.
And then settle into playing regionally, and maybe having a little flexibility based on weather to make those things happen.
Okay. I mean, I like the general theory of what you're talking about. Like you said, mid-March, it's still not going to be balmy here in South Bend by any means. So I like the idea of maybe you open the season and you go to San Antonio, Texas, where they've had that Irish Baseball Classic. And a big thing about if you continue to go down there – as we've talked about on this show before, the players themselves don't stay in hotels when they're in San Antonio because the Notre Dame alumni group puts it on and they stay in host houses. So you're still saving some, you know, you still have to fly down there, but you're not paying for all the hotels and stuff like that. So there are some savings right there. So that's potentially an opening weekend type thing. What I was thinking about for the second weekend is, like, you get the six of the bigger Division I programs in the state. You've got Notre Dame, Indiana, Purdue, Butler, Evansville, Indiana State, and you converge on Victory Field in Indianapolis, and you have three games a day over 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Kind of a kickoff event, like a Crossroads Classic, essentially.
Yeah, that's
for
what
baseball.
I was going to say.
You know, something like that, where you've got a kickoff event down there in Indianapolis, or you could even play some of the games in home parks, as long as you're, you know, everyone's getting at least one game down there in Victory Field. What do you think of that idea?
I'm good with that. I vote
okay.
It. I approve.
You vote
as
yes.
New commissioner of the NCAA, I vote yes.
All right. And then, again, as Jack Swarbrick has said in his Zoom conference a few weeks ago, there's going to be more of an emphasis to try to play more regional games. So I think you could easily have, in early April, like a three-game weekend home series against a Michigan or Ohio State or something like that, you know, and obviously every other year, that kind of thing. So
it's going to be unbelievable how much money they save if they do that.
Yeah, I mean, and you can, yeah, because you can bus instead of fly by doing that. So, I mean, boom, right off the top. Okay, we've got a few minutes left here. So earlier this week, if I can find it now, where's my Trevor Bauer stuff? Man.
Well,
he
tweeted out, yeah.
Yes.
He's hearing a lot of rumors right now about a certain player agent meddling in MLBPA affairs. And if true at this point, and he says, these are only rumors, I have one thing to say. Scott Boras, rep your clients however you want, but keep your personal agenda out of union business.
Yes.
And then if you then clicked on that, right below it, he goes, I didn't realize Scott Boras was on Twitter, so he made sure to tag him.
That's right. It was a beautiful thing. And the Associated Press obtained an email that Boras wrote where he addressed players, and I'll read part of it. Quote, remember, games cannot be played without you, Boras wrote to his clients. Players should not agree to further pay cuts to bail out the owners. Let owners take some of their record revenues and profits from the past several years and pay you the prorated salaries you agreed to accept, or let them borrow against the asset values they created from the use of those profits players generated, end quote. Again, that is part of an email that agent Scott Boras sent to his clients. And I'll just say this, Evan, I agree with sort of the general sentiment that Scott Boras is saying, but I also more agree with Trevor Bauer that Scott Boras has no business sticking his nose in this kind of negotiations between the players' union and ownership in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, no doubt. A little bit of both. I mean, I think there's some truth there, but certainly you don't want agents to start to have their opinions chirped and heard. That's not what they do.
No, I mean, he already has enough power just with the way he does things. This last offseason, five clients of his signed $1 billion worth of free agent contracts.
That's decent
offseason. Yeah.
Decent offseason.
Yeah. So, I mean, are you hopeful at all, or how hopeful are you, Evan, that we still have Major League Baseball sometime this summer?
Well, if they don't, you know, they're going to have some replacement players, so you and I better start getting ready.
That's right. You're probably right about that. And with you, it'd be okay. With me, it gets a little bit scarier. So somebody better start getting ready, though, because I just...
In order of when they'll play first, NBA, yeah. NHL, NFL, MLB. I have no hope in the MLB right now.
I have very little. My hope is... I have tried to hold out hope. My hope for the NFL has been shrinking day by day, I think. But supposedly they've sent a counterproposal to Major League Baseball. So, I don't know. We will see. Evan, good stuff as always. You have a great weekend, and I will talk to you next week. All right.
Sounds good. See you later.
Okay, you too. For our engineer, Jess Hollis, and for Evan Sharpley, I'm Sean Stiers. Leprechaun Lunch presented by Bud Light Seltzer, light and refreshing in mango, strawberry, lemon, lime, black cherry. It is Bud Light Seltzer. Budweiser's weekday sports beat tonight, WSBT South Bend.